Hello. Good morning and welcome to News from the Yuma Sun. I'm Marcia French, your volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today is Thursday, December 18th. I have news today, including the weather, some articles from around town. I have two obituaries and a sports article. Here's the weather, and I will mention that none of the precipitation numbers are above 2%, but there is 1 or 2% each day. Thursday, that's today, 82 degrees for the high, 55 degrees for the low, mostly sunny. Friday, 81 and 52, sunny. Saturday, the 20th, 79 degrees and 53, sunny. And that's also for Sunday, the 21st. Monday, the high is projected to be 79 degrees. With a low of 55 and partly cloudy. My first article, two were killed in a wrong-way crash on I-8 in east of Yuma. This is by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer, December 16th. Two people were killed and two others injured early Monday in a head-on collision involving a wrong-way driver on Interstate 8 east of Yuma, according to the Arizona Department of Public Safety. DPS said its Operational Communications Dispatch Center received reports at about 12:52 a.m. of a vehicle traveling westbound in the eastbound lanes of I-8 near milepost 21, close to old U.S. 80. The vehicle continued in the wrong direction and collided head-on with an eastbound vehicle near milepost 19, about 2 miles east of South Avenue 15E. The wrong-way vehicle came to rest against a concrete barrier, while the eastbound vehicle remained in the travel lanes, blocking traffic. Both drivers were pronounced dead at the scene. Two passengers from the eastbound vehicle were taken to a hospital in Yuma. DPS said the front seat passenger was later airlifted to a hospital in Phoenix in critical condition, while a rear seat passenger was treated for minor injuries and released. Impairment is being investigated as a possible contributing factor. The investigation remains ongoing. Agencies assisting at the scene included the Yuma County Sheriff's Office, the Arizona Department of Transportation, Yuma Rural Metro Fire Department, and the Stafford County Sheriff's Department in Virginia. Three San Luis High School students earn QuestBridge scholarships. This is a staff report from December 16th. That was Tuesday. Three San Luis High School students have been awarded full scholarships to attend some of the nation's top universities through the QuestBridge National College Match Program. Alonzo Mendoza was matched with Stanford University, where he plans to study electrical engineering. Nilce Reyes was matched with Wesleyan University and intends to major in English with a concentration in creative writing. Emilio Lopez was matched with Emory University, where he plans to study biochemistry for a pathway to medical school. Each student will receive a four-year full-ride scholarship covering tuition, fees, housing, meals, and books at their matched institution. To me, this opportunity means that all the hard work and sleepless nights of the past 4 years have borne fruit, for I have the privilege of attending a prestigious university without worrying about putting any financial strain on my parents, Reyes said. It also means I can finally fulfill the promise I made to my younger self, to be a source of pride to my parents and study English in a place rich with history. The QuestBridge National College Match allows students to rank up to 15 partner colleges in order of preference. Students learn whether they have been matched with one of their selected schools in early December. According to QuestBridge, applicants must come from low-income households and demonstrate strong academic achievement to be considered for the program. The organization focuses on expanding access to higher education for high-achieving students from low-income backgrounds, regardless of race, geographic location, or intended field of study. San Luis High School officials praised the students' accomplishments, noting that the scholarships open doors to educational opportunities that might otherwise be out of reach. My next article is Rural Metro Fire Department has added a new child safety resource for local families with the certification of one of its firefighters as a child passenger safety technician. The department announced that firefighter and EMT Danny Willinger has earned his certification as a Certified Child Passenger Safety Technician, or CPST, allowing him to provide hands-on assistance to parents and caregivers on proper car seat use. As a CPST, Willinger is trained to help families correctly install car seats, properly secure children, and understand when it is time to move to the next car seat or booster stage based on a child's age, size, and development. Rural Metro said Willinger will offer personalized instruction and answer questions during car seat checks. Families are asked to bring their vehicle's owner's manual and car seat instructions to appointments. In addition to his regular duties as a firefighter and EMT, Willinger will be available for car seat inspections at Rural Metro Fire Station 10 on select days. The department said those dates will be announced alongside its burn day notices. Rural Metro officials said child passenger safety is a critical issue and that certified car seat technicians play an important role in preventing injuries and saving lives. The department encouraged families to watch its social media pages for upcoming car seat check dates and additional information. Welton Electric Light Parade is set for Friday. This article is by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer, from Tuesday. There's a map that's available, but I, of course, can't read it to you, that shows the route for the town of Welton's Electric Light Parade on Friday, December 19th. The parade will begin near Coyote Wash Golf Course area, travel through Welton streets, and conclude at Butterfield Park, where photos with Santa are scheduled to begin at 6:15 p.m. This is the town of Welton kicking off its holiday season. There'll be decorated vehicles, festive lights, and community cheer. Parade participants are scheduled to begin lining up at 4:30 p.m. in the dirt lot across from Coyote Wash Golf Course. All entries must be in place by 5 p.m., with the parade set to start promptly at 5:30 p.m. Welton police officers will be on hand to direct traffic during lineup and the event. The parade will follow a designated route through town and conclude at Butterfield Park. Following the parade, children and families will have the opportunity to take photos with Santa beginning at 6:15 p.m. at the park. Organizers say the event is open to the public and encourages residents to come out and enjoy an evening of holiday lights and community spirit. For more information, residents may call 928-785-3348 and ask for Marie Miranda. I have two obituaries today. Elaine Emma Desgranges, age 98, of Yuma, passed away December 13th in Yuma. She was a nurse's aide born in Mondavi, Wisconsin. Private cremation and arrangements were entrusted and handled by Sunset Vista Funeral Home and Cemetery. Perry Joseph Penske passed away on December 6th at the age of 67 in Yuma. He was born and raised in Yuma. He worked alongside his father at Penn Signs, and his signs became landmarks in their own right. He was a member of Rotary and of the World Sign Association. There will be a memorial service celebrating his life on Saturday, December 20th, 1 p.m. at Christ Lutheran Church, 2555 South Engler Avenue. Reception to follow at Yuma Golf and Country Club, 3150 South Fortuna Avenue. Live stream services are available through Christ Lutheran Church. You can call 928-726-0773 for a YouTube link. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to the Christ Lutheran Church Building Fund and or Mayo Clinic's Pancreatic Cancer Early Detection Research Program in his honor. Sports. Cibola basketball raids the palace. This is by Mac Friday, sports editor from December 15th. Cibola Boys Hoops 3-3 took care of business on the north side of town on Monday night, defeating local rival Yuma High 3-3, 62-34 on Bog McClendon Court inside the Palace Gymnasium. The two sides traded leads early with both defenses running rampant, but the Raiders found consistency in exploiting Yuma High's zone defense down the stretch. Cibola led 19-6 at the end of the first, then went on a 15-5 run that lasted nearly the entire second quarter, forcing turnovers against a criminal's offense that struggled in sets while trying to be dependent on success on the break against the Cibola press. The Raiders extended their lead to 18 points at halftime, leading 35-17. That lead ballooned after the Raiders put up another 19 points in the third, tying the mark they recorded with their hot start in the first. Yuma High was once again in double digits with 11 points, trailing 54-27 by the end of the third. The Raiders called off the dogs, scoring just 8 in the final frame. Yuma High senior guard Elmer Emerson led the Crims with 11 points. Cibola senior forward Isaac Navarro and senior guard Jason Johnson each had 14 for the Raiders. Outside of Monday's typical basketball-affiliated emotions, it was a strange night for longtime Yuma High teacher and coach Kurt Weber. The namesake for YH's Kurt the Crim mascot and a YHS Athletics Hall of Fame member, Weber returned to coach inside his home gym for the first time since his retirement at the end of last season, finishing a tenure of nearly 50 years with the school and multiple stints in various head coaching roles at the school in football and basketball. Eager to stay busy and still contribute in the coaching realm, Weber called up first-year Cibola head coach Jason Harmony ahead of the season, volunteering his assistance and knowledge. "That was the easiest yes ever," Harmony said. "I was more than happy to bring him on and listen to the vast amount of knowledge he brings to the table. He's been a huge help." However, instead of wearing navy on the home side of the floor, Weber donned Cibola black on the visitor's end, keeping stats on his clipboard as he watched his new team battle a criminal's roster he is very familiar with. "There was definitely a bit of deja vu," Weber said. "I was more concerned going into it with how the night was going to go than how it actually turned out, which was nice. The Palace is always a great place to play. I still help out at Yuma High in a number of ways, but this was a chance to hand this program off to a new coach and let first-year head coach Loudon Young establish what he wants. At Cibola, I get to coach and enjoy all the things that come with it without the bureaucracy of being a head coach." The Raiders visit Mountain View Mesa on Friday night. Yuma High has a long break before a game against Coronado on January 8th after winter break. My next article, Sheriff's Office Releases Level 1 Sex Offender Notice. This is by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer from Tuesday. The Yuma County Sheriff's Office has issued a Level 1 Sex Offender Community Notification for a man now living in Yuma. Sheriff's officials said Jacob Daniel Ficker, 41, has reported a new address at 13117 East 42nd Drive. The notification is being released pursuant to Arizona's Community Notification on Sex Offenders Law. Ficker is described as 6 feet 3 inches tall, 210 pounds, with brown hair and blue eyes. He is not wanted by the Yuma County Sheriff's Office at this time. According to YCSO, Ficker pleaded guilty on April 29, 2002 in Maricopa County Superior Court in Goodyear to 2 counts of attempted molestation of a child. He was sentenced to 1 year in the Arizona Department of Corrections, followed by lifetime probation. The victims were 2 female juveniles known to him, authorities said. Ficker is classified as a level 1 sex offender, which indicates a low risk to reoffend under the state's classification system. Sex offenders are categorized into three levels, ranging from level 1, low risk, to level 3, high risk. The sheriff's office emphasized that the notification is intended to inform the public, not to create fear. YCSO said it has no legal authority to dictate where a sex offender may leave, absent court-ordered restrictions, and warned that harassment, threats, or intimidation of offenders will not be tolerated. Officials noted that registered sex offenders have long lived in communities, but state law allows law enforcement to share certain information to promote public awareness. Residents can sign up for free email alerts or search for registered sex offenders through the Yuma County Sheriff's Office Offender Watch Program. Anyone with information about current criminal activity involving this or any other offender is encouraged to contact YCSO at 928-783-4427. You're listening to news from the Yuma Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. My next article, a bill would remove speed limits on some Arizona interstates. This article is by Howard Fisher from Capital Media Services, posted on Tuesday. Phoenix, Arizona could become the only state in the nation without a maximum speed limit on some of its highways. Representative Nick Cupper is proposing that speed limits on rural roads be at least 80 miles per hour in rural areas, 5 miles faster than the highest limits now on any Arizona highway. But his HB 2059 would allow the director of the State Department of Transportation to deregulate entirely rural stretches of highway so that there would be no posted limit at all during daylight hours for non-commercial traffic. And to prove his argument that removing speed limits is not unsafe, the legislation actually would mandate a pilot project designated a stretch of Interstate 8 between Casa Grande and Yuma. How much would be up to the ADOT director as a restricted speed zone for at least a year to see whether it affected crash rates? That, however, would be during daylight hours and only for non-commercial vehicles. Trucks, buses, and trailers would be limited to 80, and that would be the top speed for everyone at night. Then, as Cupper sees it, ADOT would use that information to decide whether, first, to keep that designation in place on I-8, and later, to expand deregulation speeds on other interstate highways in non-urbanized areas, defined as any stretch where there are 50,000 or fewer residents. That could mean deregulating speed limits along large expanses of Interstates 10, 17, 19, and 40, along with a segment of I-15 that runs through the northwest corner of Arizona. It would also make Arizona the only state in the nation with no posted speed limit on some of its highways. I fully appreciate the fact that, naturally, your first inclination is, that's craziness, you're going to kill people, Cupper said. However, the data proves otherwise, he continued, and I want to do this pilot program to prove that we can actually do this and save lives. Cupper cited research from Montana. He said that higher limits resulted in more motorists driving similar speed limits, actually resulting in fewer accidents. That is backed by a report by the Montana Department of Transportation, which, looking at other studies, said that crash severity may increase because of variances in speed and not because of higher speeds, though that study also included not just divided access highways, but also two-lane roads. It's kind of an interesting psychological phenomenon where when you don't have a set speed limit, people tend to coalesce around a certain speed, Cupper said. Yes, he said, overall speeds went up about 5 miles per hour. However, what was really interesting was that the fastest person and the slowest person tended to be closer in speed to each other than when you have a set speed limit, Cupper said. And when you have less of a variance, you have fewer accidents and fewer fatalities. There even is some local evidence to back up that contention. In 2023, ADOT boosted the speed limit on a stretch of I-17 from 55 miles an hour to 65, saying that the higher limit can result in more drivers traveling closer to the same speed, which enhances safety. And ADOT made the same comment last week when it raised the speed limit on a four-lane stretch of State Route 24 in southeast Maricopa County from 45 to 55 miles an hour. Anyway, Copper said, if police aren't focused on speed, they can pay more attention to other issues, like using a phone while driving or not wearing a speed belt, things that will get you killed. Copper said he understands that there will be some who will insist that higher speeds will lead to more dead motorists. Now, they don't have any data to prove me wrong, he said. Naturally, it feels wrong, he said, and people go by feelings. I get it. But the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety says it actually does have the data to contradict what Copper is claiming. Research has found that higher speed limits are associated with more crash fatalities, said Joseph Young, the organization's director of media relations. A study of 25 years of speed limit increases across the country found that raising the state speed limit by 5 miles per hour results in about an 8% increase in fatality rates on those roads with the highest speed limits, like interstates, he said. Overall, Young said, over those 25 years, about 37,000 deaths could be attributed to a speed limit increase. Copper said, however, none of that should affect his proposal to scrap the current 75-mile-per-hour speed limits on rural interstates. People are going 10 to 15 over already, he said. In fact, he said, that's why he chose Interstate 8 as his one-year test area. They're traveling faster than that right now, 85 to 90 as it is, Copper said, with long straight stretches and few entrances and exits. The data that I've been able to pull shows that per vehicle mile traveled, it's the safest interstate we have. Anyway, he said, it's not like once the limits are lifted, that's the end of the discussion. If the data comes back and the ADOT director said, it's more dangerous, we don't do it anymore, it's over, Copper said. It gives them the authority after a year to continue on, he said. Or, I guess, if we at the legislature decide to do something different with it, we could. But Copper said he doubts that lawmakers would unilaterally rescind the deregulated designation on that stretch of road. What higher rural speed limits would mean is cutting travel time. Consider that San Diego trip on Interstate 8, the road that would be the test area. It's about 150 miles between the edges of the urban areas of Casa Grande and Yuma. At 75 miles an hour, assuming no bathroom or burger breaks, that's about 2 hours and 20 minutes. And depending on how much of the highway is designated a test area, someone driving up to 95 could take about 30 minutes off of that. And it's not like his legislation would mean motorists could do what they want on rural interstates, even if the ADOT director agreed that change is merited in certain areas. His bill still would require people to drive at a speed that is reasonable and prudent, and that is specifically defined for those unrestricted stretches as speed that is excessive given road and weather conditions, traffic volume, visibility, the vehicle's mechanical condition, and a driver's reaction time. But Copper said that last factor doesn't mean highway patrol officers will be administering tests to motorists they have stopped to gauge their reaction time. Instead, he said, it means someone following too closely given the speed they were going. Let's say you're going 85 miles per hour and you're 20 feet behind the car in front of you, he said. That is not reasonable. I think everyone could assume that. It's not going to give you the reaction time to put on the brake if something happens. Young said he questioned whether it's safe to simply declare that anything is reasonable and prudent is legal. It may prove challenging for officers to enforce, he said. And Young said if Arizona does boost rural interstate speed limits, whether just to 80 or deregulate entirely, the state should be sure there's a clear plan in place to enforce those limits, and not just on the highways. Research has shown that higher speed limits can have a spillover effect on nearby roads where there was no intention to change the limit, he said. That's our show for today. I'm really glad you've been able to stay with me. And we're going into the holidays. The next 2 weeks will be holiday time for Christmas and New Year's. We're already in Hanukkah. I hope the best for you. The Wall Street Journal is next, and I hope that you can stay along and listen to that also. Don't forget, if you miss a program or for any of our special holiday programming, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/clicking on the broadcast info tab and audio on demand. You can always take SunSounds with you by getting it streamed or on demand on the SunSounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. And you can always ask your smart appliance, your Echo Dot or smart home streaming service, to say, play SunSounds. We offer those ways to make life easy for you, and we really appreciate the time that you spend with us. May your holidays bring you everything that you hope. Have a very good season.